Looking for a guiding hand in your Amazon business? Wizards of Ecom Academy is here for you. Our personalized support system includes unlimited email access to myself and my entire team to help you overcome challenges and strategize effectively. Sign up for an exclusive rate at wizardsofecom.com/academy. Your personal e-commerce coach awaits.
Welcome to the Wizards of Ecom, your no-fluff playbook for online success. Each episode is fully packed with actionable tactics you can implement in your business right now. Take your life to a higher level and excel in your online success. It's time to work on you and your business. Let's do this.
Welcome back to the Wizards of Ecom. My name is Carlos Alvarez, and I will be your host. On today's episode, we have serial entrepreneur and co-founder of both Thomason and SoStocked, Dan Fernandez. Dan, welcome to the show.
Hey, nice to be here.
Absolutely, man. I really enjoyed our pre-show chat. So today's episode, we're really going to dive into, you know, influencers, content, specifically as it pertains to Thomason. I mentioned you're also the co-founder of SoStock, and I've had an exhilarating conversation with Chelsea, and I can't wait to get into that in like the near future with SoStock. It's pretty amazing.
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
You could speak at an expert level, I'm sure, on creating amazing software, partnerships, SoStock, and a lot more. Like I mentioned, my main reason for having you on the show is influencers and content. Specifically, how you make it easy to connect with and work with influencers and curate content with Thomason. In your own words, for someone that, by the way, if anyone doesn't know what Thomason.com is, they've not been selling for more than, what do we say, 4 years, 5 years? Because you couldn't talk about Amazon for a period without mentioning Thomason.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, I mean, we started it back in 08. So, I mean, it's been around just as a very beta basic, but yeah, it's been around for a long, long time. I mean, even our big heyday was kind of beginning of 2012, 13, 14, kind of in that area where it was really super, super popular.
In your own words, what is Thomason and why did you bring it to life?
So Thomason is an influencer marketing platform that helps kind of bridge the gap between brands and influencers and connects them in a way that you can scale up your content marketing strategies. So what I mean by that is, let's say you are a belt company and you want to work with fashion influencers on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, you can put up your product on our platform. Influencers, then it's kind of a two-way marketplace. So then influencers can see those products and determine, oh, I have whether it's a page, it's a channel, podcast, I mean, sky's the limit, YouTube channel, that matches up with that product. And I think that product would fit well with my market and my readers and all that kind of stuff. So you can essentially kind of like a job post, so to speak, put a product out there, say, hey, here's my product, here's my brand, who's an influencer that would want to work with me? Influencers apply. And then from there, you can filter down through their different statistics. You can go look at their page. And then once you vet them, and if it's an influencer that you actually want to work with, we have an escrow system built in so that if you pay it, you know, you're doing a paid promotion or paid campaign for an influencer, not obviously on Amazon. This is just you are doing, let's say you have a Shopify site and you're trying to do a paid campaign on Instagram, that you can deposit that money. The influencer knows you're good for the money if they do what you guys have agreed upon. Once they've completed, whether the video, photo shoot, whatever you guys have determined, they have to verify the post. They make sure that it's complying with FTC so that, you know, they've mentioned hashtag ad or et cetera. You go look at it and say, yep, verified, good. And then you can release payments. So it kind of builds the whole workflow of influencer marketing into a place, and it just kind of start to finish, you're able to work with an influencer on creating that content, whether it's, like I said, images, stills, written content on blogs or videos.
Let's use a real example, like say I want to launch a gardening brand, like a gardening accessories brand in the next 3 to 6 months. where, and I want to use, like the power of Thomason or leverage the power of Thomason. Like what am I doing? And how do I know who I'm working with can really help me in that space?
Exactly. So what you're going to do is create a campaign. Okay. And the campaign would be geared around that product, that gardening product that you want. And within that campaign, then you can, similar to a job post, you can list, what are you looking for? Oh, I'm looking for only YouTubers. I'm looking for only Facebookers or Instagram, just depending on what coming into that campaign, you should have some idea of what you're looking for, because otherwise you're going to shotgun it and you're going to be overwhelmed. But if you go, I need video, you know, to help my marketing, or I need blog posts, or I need images, I would focus on creating a campaign, and you can identify that. So let's say you're looking for images. You probably look for influencers on Instagram because they're very image focused. So I'm looking for only Instagrammers that have a minimum of 1,000 followers or more, whatever number you want. And then you can identify, hey, I'm looking for 5 pictures of our real life examples of our gardening tool in your garden. Okay. And go post it out there. People, just like a job application, come, they see it, they'll apply to your campaign. And sometimes they'll send you messages like, oh, here's what I'm thinking with my content. Here's what I would do with it. And you can vet that. You can put the people into a short list. And then at that juncture, once you've kind of sorted, filtered who you like, you can go to, you can click on the links, go look at their profiles, look at their Instagram page, look at past posts they've done. Everything's kind of compartmentalized for you to look at. And then at that juncture, they've also submitted a bid to say, hey, this will either, you know, if they're a good influencer, they're going to charge money. It's just kind of the way the world has evolved into. You can agree on the terms of it. Once you approve it, you make payment for that influencer. That influencer is notified. And at that juncture, you guys can communicate. Sometimes the influencer, if you have clear enough instructions, they just take it, run, go, post. You get notification to, you got 7 days to review the post. If you don't review it in 7 days, it's just assumed that it's good. And at that juncture, you release the payment to them. They've posted it. And then at this point, now you can either repost that, you can, depending on the terms that you've agreed upon, you can download those assets, you can repurpose those assets. That's the big, that's how, you know, everybody talks about evergreen content. So working with an influencer to create this evergreen content that then you can repurpose in your website, in your own posts, and all those kind of situations that really allow you to not, content, organic content so hard to make. This is kind of just allowing you to scale your organic content and have it be unique. So it's not always your model doing it or your person, you know, it's everybody from a very professional person to the mom down the street that has, you know, 600-700 friends, which we call a micro influencer. But sometimes those micro influencers actually can bring more revenue than a big massive influencer, just depending on what we call engagement. So how often when somebody makes a post, does somebody engage with it? Like retweet it, comment on it, you know, thumb up, etc. And that's another stat that you get, is to understand, well, yeah, this person has 1 million followers, but literally their average engagement is 10. Well, you know, maybe there's something going on there. So it could just be they just, all they do is post and they have a very locked down community, but more often than not, it's something that you should probably look into. And these stats are all right there for you to look at and make a decision on, and go from there. So that's kind of, as a gardener, that's what I would do. Post, have a very clear idea. One, two, you make the post on what network you want. So photos, probably Instagram, you could do Facebook too. Videos, obviously you want to find a decent YouTuber. Granted, Instagrammers have, I mean, everybody now, video is such a big relevant part, but YouTube is just an easy filter for you to set. And then once that comes back, a little bit of communication with them in the messaging center to understand what direction are they going with it. And the one pro tip is don't be too overbearing with your direction. That's kind of, influencers love their own creativity, their own voice. Like, you pick them for a reason. Let them, you know, try not to micromanage them. But at the same time, if you have some high level direction, like, hey, I'm really looking for this in a garden. What you do in the garden, I don't, you know, depending on what your product is fine. But because then you know how you can also repurpose it in the future. Okay. And then once it's done, you want to, the last thing is have communication with the influencer that you're able to repurpose that content. Who has ownership of it? Okay. And at that point, let them go, let the system, let the software do its work. And then now you have assets that you can use in the future, create a really well-organized, whether Dropbox or Google Drive, that you can save all this so that it's not just scattered everywhere. And if you can do this, it's kind of a pain to have this SOP. And I know a lot of Amazoners have VAs. If you can make this SOP, it becomes far easier for when you're like, oh, shoot, do I have content about, you know, sunny day mail in a garden, you know? And it would be nice when you get the assets, also tag them properly so they're easy to come back and filter them. I know Google Drive, if you're uploading them into the photo tools and whatnot, they have enough face recognition and stuff that they can kind of pick it out. But it's, if you have specific campaigns that you use it for, use naming conventions like that to kind of keep yourself organized, because then the content just doesn't go away. It truly becomes, to come full circle, evergreen, because you can keep repurposing it and repurposing it and repurposing it.
That is fire. I've gone down like memory lane, like 8 different trips, like as like a power user. A few clarifications for people listening. When you say organic, you're referring to UGC, like user generated content? Correct. Or are you meaning something? You are. Okay. What about the product? So they're creating a piece of user generated content. Let's say it's my planter and this bowl. And I've put it like a job application out there on Thomason. I've got a lot of bites, if you will. Sure. I vet them. I'm like, this is what I'm looking for. And I now need to get my pot to them. Mm-hmm. How are most people handling that? Because I think initially someone's like, I'll just have them buy it on Amazon.
Yeah.
You know, and put some URL. Like, what's the mechanics of that?
So typically people are shipping them. So that's one of the pieces of the workflow within Thomason, is that all the users have addresses and locations inputted. So once you approve them, you instantly know. And when you create the campaign, you can let them know how you're going to deliver it to them. Okay. So we've had users to where, let's say all your stuff's at FBA, which is kind of crazy now with restock limits. And that's a whole nother podcast, I'm sure. But let's say all your stuff's at FBA. What you can do is you'll have their address. You can go on the back end of FBA and just ship them something very quick and easy. That way you're able to get it to them. It's free of charge to the influencer, and it's a seamless process because you have their address. Another way is you download it and you just ship it yourself. You can input tracking information for the influencer so they know it's coming. It's always better to put tracking info in there, because also if, say, influencer XYZ says, I never got it, you know, it's happened, you at least have something, especially if it's a more expensive product, you can say, you got it. There's no disputing that. And now you, whether it's payment or escrow funds or all that kind of stuff, can be handled properly. But that's typically the way that people are sending products to influencers, is either they're just downloading it and sending it themselves, or if they have something at FBA, they're downloading the address, going into FBA and just saying, hey, here's a free shipment, and just ship out the product to the influencer.
It's genius. Like, it's absolute genius. And like, no one was really hearing about influencers or anything like that. At least I wasn't. And until I started working with Thomason, God knows how many years ago, the timing was just, you couldn't have timed that better. It feels like what about, you mentioned the engagement ratio, and there's like I've read books on this. Like, it's so complicated depending on the platform. Can you dive a little more into how someone should approach? They're going to launch a gardening brand. They got these bowls, and all of a sudden a whole bunch of people pop up with, you know, 100,000 followers on Instagram in a gardening niche. How can you tell that that's real versus the micro influencer that I agree with you might have a much better conversion?
Exactly. So I'll start with the micro influencer, because sometimes they're a little harder to understand. That's the micro influencer typically is somebody with less than a, you know, and as the world has evolved, less than, we'll just say it, less than 1,000 followers. Okay. And they are really focused on just family, friends, truly using, let's say, Facebook for what it's intended for, just hanging out with family, friends, sharing photos back and forth. Maybe they have a private page, you know, their profile is private and they only share it with who they want. And you know what? They do Thomason on the side just because they love seeing the products. They like, you know, finding cool new things or for whatever reason. So those are people that it's going to be, you're going to see that maybe the ratio of it, like they have 1,000 followers. We'll just do simple math. They, every time they post, they get anywhere, let's just say 100 pieces of interaction, whether it's across the board. That's a really, really powerful or popular person, because every time they're posting, they're getting 10% of their audience to pay attention and not just see it, but interact with it. Actually, you know, it's like when you read something and you just read it and move on, or you read it and actually understand it and digest it and can articulate it to somebody else. So at a micro influencer level, a lot of times if you're seeing somebody with, you know, every time they post, they're getting 10, 15 pieces of interaction, you know, like they're actually interacting with people, especially the way Facebook and all these places have been trying to crack down on that. Okay. Now you go on a different level where, let's say you got 100,000, you got a million, whatever. It's pretty hard to get a 10%. I mean, you're going to pay an arm and a leg for that at those levels. Those are really, really popular people. And I mean, I've heard there was the YouTube kid, the 10-year-old that was doing toy videos. And I think he was getting 25K a pop per video. And, but granted, he had the audience, and when it went, it went, but you pay what you get for what you get. So I guess to come around and actually give a number, I mean, if you got 100,000 and you're posting and you're getting, you know, 500 to 1,000 pieces of interaction, granted, the micro influencer that gets 100, that's just me doing simple math. More likely it's probably in the 10 to 50 range. But if you get, you know, each time 500, 1,000, you know, 10,000, you're getting towards that 10%. That's crazy conversion. That's really interactive. And what's nice too is that it doesn't take you very long. Like at a high level, you can see on Thomason their interactions. So you can quickly vet, you know, your top 10 and shortlist them. Once you get that shortlist, especially if you're going to be paying money, it's very advantageous for you to at least quickly jump on their social page and just read through. Is it, you know, does it look like it was a bot that was just like click, 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 like, or does it actually have comments that have been interacted with? And it takes, I mean, you can, as a human being, you can eyeball that in 2 seconds. So always look for a decent ratio. Just understand the higher it is, like you're getting into 50 million, it's pretty hard to have a 10% ratio, just because the people that have interacted or liked you maybe haven't unfollowed you, or, you know, like even Kim Kardashian or some of these crazy influencers, they have people that aren't even paying attention to them. So the ratio is a little harder to interact with compared to a micro influencer. That's, you know, my brother and my dad and stuff who are always like curious about what I'm doing.
Yeah. So I don't know, rule of thumb is the right thing, or just a gauge you can, like a quick look, like something you can use, take a quick measure. Because if I followed an influencer on, you know, how to get fit 5 years ago, and maybe I got fit or realized, you know, to hell with this, I'm going to stay fat, I might not have unfollowed them. I might have like I'm still showing, but I'm definitely not engaging with their content. But it doesn't mean they have bots. So that makes total sense. What's the process for an influencer to appear and be served up in Thomason?
So it's free to sign up, but then they need to connect an account, right? So they need to connect a blog, they need to connect Facebook or something, and that's through the API. And so the blog's through Google Analytics. So if they actually have stats, it's stats being pulled out of Google Analytics API, which means they have to log in and verify. The same with Facebook. It's the API. And API just meaning like it's the actual, if you've ever gone around and seen the login with Facebook or whatnot, that's the API. It's hitting the back end of Facebook so that you can log in and verify that that's actually your account. So once they do that, that's when all that data gets pulled in, because they authorize to say, yeah, you can look at my data to display my engagement or just to display my, maybe not even engagement, but you can display my posts. You can tell how many Facebook followers I have and, you know, the things that are all following each of the social networks have different guidelines, but it will show what is that influencer's stats for each of the networks. And then from there, you can filter, hey, how many, I'm looking for somebody on Facebook or I'm looking for YouTube or Instagram, et cetera, and go from there. So an influencer at that point signs up, registers, they can fill out a little bio profile, upload their pic, kind of do a little header banner. And then at that juncture, it's up to them to, you know, kind of surf around, look through the categories, find what they're really looking for. We do serve up email content. We have an algorithm on the back end that kind of looks at what they have for content and what's on our site. And we'll say, oh, hey, here's probably your top 10 that are relevant to you in your category, because they also select categories that they want to get content in. So the people that are really identifying one or two niches are the people that, I mean, they say riches are in the niches. So those are the people that are typically getting more for their posts, but also they do far better because they have a hyper-focused market.
And so what I get out of that is that people, it's very difficult for someone to create some fake profile and just stick it up there as if they were an influencer.
Correct. And I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I mean, it's the internet. It's built on craziness like that. So,
well, there's fake accounts of presidents. So yeah, it's exactly going to happen. Yeah.
I mean, it's going to happen. And we try on the back end to, when we get notified, to then vet that, to curate that. If we have people that are getting too many complaints and reports and scamming or not following terms of services or trying to do illegitimate stuff on, you know, any social network, we go, we investigate it and make sure, like with an actual, we have a person here in the office that's their job, and they'll go review it to make sure that either they did what they were supposed to do, that was in the you know, everything's fairly black and white. There's always a little bit of gray area, but it's kind of 90% of the campaign is pretty much spelled out. So it's pretty hard to work around that. And as far as fake, you know, those, the dead giveaway is when you got massive amounts of followers and no engagement. I mean, that's why that stat's there.
Yeah. What about cost? That's what everyone listening to this is going to want to know. Like two parts to this cost. Before somebody, because a lot of people, they just get a tool or something and they fill out the profile.
Sure.
They turn it on and they're like, it's not making me money.
Yep.
Right. So like what sort of investment should somebody make before, like, I guess, passing judgment on Thomason and say, yes, this is something that I should be using. I'm seeing success from this, or I'm seeing action. And then also, how much does it cost to use Thomason as far as fees and memberships and stuff like that?
Sure. So the fees, it depends. It's anywhere. You have a free trial. It starts anywhere, $39 a month, and kind of goes up from there. Just depending
based on what
number of campaigns and a typically it's campaigns. You know, do you have a ton of campaigns that you're going after? Then yeah, it's going to go up and up and up. But more often than not, people are in that $39 to $99 range. That's majority of people are falling in that, that monthly rate. And that's to see pay employees, help keep the lights on, et cetera. Now, when you're paying an influencer, that's kind of a loaded question, because if they're good, and what I tell a lot of people is, what are you trying to get out of that relationship? Again, I've had people to where instead of filming a commercial with a professional crew, they've hired a YouTube influencer who has really great cinematography background and good writing and everything. And they paid this influencer to basically make their commercial. They didn't really care if it was posted online. So the engagement and the interaction, all that stuff was not that relevant to them. So instead of spending, you know, $25,000, $30,000 on a commercial, they spent $5,000 with an influencer and everybody won there. And this influencer did post it online. They got some interaction from it and it was part of his portfolio and that was cool. So everybody won there. That's what they were looking for. And they spent $5,000 compared to maybe I'm giving away, I'm just starting up. I'm really trying to watch my budget. Okay, I'm probably going to look for micro influencers that really just want a free product to talk about with their friends on Facebook. And that might just get enough a little buzz and your product is unique enough that I've seen people kickstart an amazing product that way. Now, on the flip side, I've also seen people try and do this with multivitamins a billion times. And you see, I mean, how many multivitamins are on Amazon or all over the internet? Or I mean,
good God.
So, and then they expect to become rich. So that's, I mean, you kind of got to go back to Amazon's amazing and the internet's amazing, but it's, again, it comes back to hard work and all those kind of natural business things. Just because it's the internet doesn't mean that you don't have six different channels of marketing and you don't, you know, you're not grinding out all of this. Granted, the people that you hear about that, oh, I put it online and I exploded, you know, that's somewhat of a, you know, home run, unicorn, whatever you want to talk about. It's the people that have the longevity or the people that are, yeah, I have a process. I run six campaigns a month. And then on top of that, after the campaigns ran, I repurposed that in a retargeting ad on Facebook. And granted, now with the iPhone thing, that's a whole nother issue as well with retargeting. But I leveraged, I try and use this in a process of not just influencer marketing, right? I use it with my PPC. I use it on blog posts. Like, let's say I'm writing, going back to your gardening example, I'm writing about a blog post on 10 cool ways to use my pot, my planter, okay? And now I hire 10 different influencers and I'm the mediator between having them talk about, okay, you're going to get, I see that this person's in California, this person's in Minnesota in the winter, this person's in Florida, and I have an idea about how would you use it in your climate, you know. But that's the idea, those are the ideas that do really well and that people can not only dial it in and help the influencer understand the direction, which a lot of times also helps on cost, because if the influencer has to spend more time thinking, being creative, doing stuff, if they don't want to, if they have a general direction, it's far easier for the influencer to see the end result and wrap a price around it compared to, well, just make some content. And then
make it pop.
Yeah, the influencer's been around for a long time and either they're really a creative spirit, I like to call it, and they're just going to be whimsical and creative and fun and go nuts. Or they know, ooh, that's somewhat of a red flag. I want to learn a little bit more about what are you really looking for, so that just like any business, you know, if I'm building you a website, I'd need to know certain basic things so that I know that I'm going to deliver what you're actually looking for. Granted, the creativity and the design aspect and whatnot, but are you looking for a social networking website, a dating website, an e-commerce website, you know, or a house, you know, like what kind of house style do you like? Do you like two-story? Do you want a basement? Like some of the general aspects need to at least be laid out. And those general aspects are typically with when it comes to influencers, are you looking for written content? Are you looking for images? Are you, does the product need to be in it or does it just need to be mentioned? Because sometimes, you know, you have your potter and the potter's kind of in the background and whatever. Are you just sponsoring, you know, like I'm sure you have podcasts get sponsored, you know, sure. This podcast is sponsored by blah, 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 blah. You know, that's something that could happen where they're not even, they're just mentioning you and giving you a plug where you're not even seeing the product, but they want to interact with the product just so that they can talk towards it. So
go ahead. Do you see anybody using this in the way of, because like two things just came to mind, like creative juices are flowing now for me, sure. And like my businesses, you see anybody doing like leveraging Thomason for like, I got this gardening product I have coming out and I got my website, like hopefully people have their website and they're just not all blinders on with Amazon. Sure. And I don't want to be spammy, but I want to look for quality backlinks. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to find these influencers who have blogs and then like double check their domain authority and stuff like that and get them to mention me in a blog. Do you see people using Thomason like that? Would that be a fair use?
Oh, absolutely. And that's actually kind of how we started, where Thomason was originally intended for search engine optimization. So when we first started it, our background is in SEO, and that was what our agency was all about. And we even had an internal product or e-commerce website where we sold customized keychains. It was called Wholesale Keychain. I'm not even sure if it's still online anymore. We sold it a while ago, but anyway, this was when you could rank in front of Amazon for a word like keychain, which we did for a time, and then Amazon became the giant that it was and overtook and etc. But the strategy with SEO was kind of a three-stool approach. It was always content. It was backlinks. All right. And then is your website built in a fashion that Google can organically look at it? So a lot of times when I'm talking about SEO, I talk about it's like a city. You know, the internet's a city. And your website, if Google's a person in your city and they show up to your building, right? The first leg is your building built properly so that people can understand what's in your building? You know, if it's built in correctly, it's like Google walked into your building and there's no elevators or stairs, there's no signs. And that's the equivalent of like meta tags, H1s, and some of these other things. So can Google understand what your whole building's about? Okay. So you're about gardening stuff. Okay. And then you have content. How big is your building? Each floor is like a web page, right? So each floor, the bigger the skyscraper, the more content you have. And you want your skyscraper to be seen from a long distance away or for harder to get keywords, et cetera. So more and more unique content that's properly categorized. So Google knows all of it and it's all related and it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger. And the third component being backlinks are like, you think about it like billboards all over the city. Okay. So you have gardening tools and these ads and billboards are all over the place pointing back to your building. Google's going to go, wow, your building, other places are saying that you're about gardening. You must be about gardening. I see that you're all about gardening and you have a lot of content about gardening. Now there's a whole other slew of things like bounce rate and stuff like that. But to come back to Thomason, that was the reason that we built it, was to curate at a large scale these bloggers that would build essentially billboards all over the city, because we could internally manage at scale, building internal content, making sure our website was good, all those kind of things. What is hard to do at scale is get all these other billboards, all these other links, all these other people talking about us on other spots of the city to point back to us. And that was actually why we made Thomason in the first place, was to help curate. I mean, it started with mommy bloggers, to tell you the truth. You know, working with mommy bloggers and as many mommy bloggers as we could, as many different ones, building unique content, because it also then needed to be unique content on their website, because that's, you know, SEO 101 is if your website and this other website have the same content, Google thinks you're trying to spam them and they actually downgrade you. But if over, you know, this other website has good content, unique content that's relevant to you, and then it's linking to you, then Google is like, okay, that's, you know, granted, there's been a billion SEO changes. This is like SEO 101, you know, a lot of stuff has changed. Don't take this as like the way to optimize and do all that kind of stuff. But that's just kind of the foundation of what search engine optimization was really built on.
And but it's still totally doable, and you would use it for that. Like,
oh, if you want 100%, 100%.
So, yeah, it seems like a really quick way to do it instead of just going to Google and trying to like brute force it. Here you see your categories, you sort of see vetted, you can easily reach out, you can shortlist, and then to like tie this with Amazon, I definitely would not send people like just straight, have the blog go straight to Amazon. I'd want it to go to my website, and then you can get super creative there with sending a code on a landing page, or if you're game for like creative links, like you have a lot of options at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the advantage of Thomason, is that it brings all these people in one place, so that then you're not doing the searching and going crazy trying to find all these people. They kind of land in your lap, and then it's up to you to figure out who do you really like and why, you know? So it's an influencer dating app, I guess somebody once called it.
I want to ask another question, and the site for anyone listening, because it used to be every now and then I would like misspell it and spell, because there's like different ways to say Thomason, but it's Thomason.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. Thomason.com. And it's going to be in the show notes, but at the very top of the page, of the homepage, it says hate content less.
Yeah.
Can you unpack that a little bit? And then I want to be respectful of your time, but we got to touch on that.
Yeah. So that was our, when we did a rebrand of the site, that was always what, I mean, in the SEO world, in every, you know, business, they were always talking about, oh, I hate content. Content sucks. I got to build content and whatever. So we always, one day, I think we call it beer storming. We were having beers together, and somebody said it. Yeah. It's like, just hate that. I just want to hate content less. And we were like, ah, perfect. Because Thomason does, it helps curate that content so that if you don't want to make it and you're looking for that person within that niche, because that was the other thing. When you needed to write on-page content that was relevant to you, or off-page content, if somebody wasn't a specialist, it was really hard to make it good. So now, again, going back to gardening, you can find a gardener that can speak like a gardener, not speak like a lawyer or a just content person that's been fed a transcribed piece of junk, you know, but it's all in one spot, and you need to be involved. That's probably the biggest thing. If you just like plug and play and walk away without building your standard operating procedure, without thinking through how is it going to work for your business, you'll get a ton of people. You'll get a ton of people applying, but then you'll just kind of be running around like a chicken with your head cut off.
100% agree. Yeah. I think that happens a lot too. Like someone will get any software, they'll misuse it, and, or they'll take a bit of advice about selling on Amazon, and then they selectively apply portions of it, and then turn around and say the person that gave them that advice doesn't know what they're talking about, or the software doesn't work for this thing. I 100% agree. And by content, so I feel like there's a disconnect here for some people. Content is either written, it's video, it's audio, it's on social, it could be a blog, it could be like a lot of different things. It could be someone creating this video for you, like the example you gave a little while ago. Let's be respectful of your time. Otherwise, I could just keep going, because I have like several ideas popping in my head that I'm like, wait a minute, can I use it for this?
I was just going to say, Carlos, if we ever need to beer storm, you just let me know.
I love it. I'm going to steal that from you. Like, I'm going to mention it in my next meetup. The ways people can get a hold of you, or best way for someone to reach out to you, about Thomason. We mentioned So Stocked. I'm going to be talking a lot about that very soon. Like we created this new theme in our meetup events, actually. Yeah. And the first presentation of that type is actually going to be Chelsea Cohen presenting on So Stocked. So that's coming up. But how can somebody reach you about Thomason?
Really, the best way is via our site. It'll go, if you go to our site and just go to the contact, and if there's a specific question, kick it out. Our support reps are amazing. And then if it can't, it actually filters down to me. So I'm still somewhat involved with Thomason. So if there's something specific or, you know, hey, I saw this, can you elaborate on it? It'll definitely get to me that way.
Excellent. And listeners, there's a free trial, I guess, when somebody wants to sign up and try it. So just take advantage of that free trial. Give it a shot. If you have any questions, you could definitely reach out to me too. I've been using Thomason for years. I feel like a dinosaur though, sometimes when I say it, because like every now and then you have these sellers and like, what is that? And I can immediately know when they started selling.
When they started Amazon, I had a guy who was speaking in China, and he was blown away. After he's like, man, I didn't even think you guys were still around. Like, you guys are, I made so much money off you guys leveraging you for my Shopify site. And he was doing drop shipping before it really, he was leveraging that. I always butcher the name, but he was leveraging that and leveraging Thomason to advertise that and was just crushing it. And that was, granted, that was 10 years ago or 8 years ago.
You know, the topic I wanted to, like, there was, again, sincerely, there was like a lot of different topics that I wanted to talk to you about, but I really was excited to talk about that pivot, because I know it wasn't how you envisioned Thomason to start, like, mm-hmm. It had its purpose, but is it fair in saying that massive Amazon spike in interest of Thomason had to like send the business into the stratosphere, and then everyone across the Amazon space, it was like a Thanos snap when that happened. And almost everybody, I've had some people on the podcast that was like, you know, we love to, you know, I love to review.com and like a lot of these sites, they're gone. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just completely gone. You are here and you are thriving with the site. So like that is a podcast in and of itself. I feel like, how did you deal with that?
Yeah, it was a stressful time, but the advantage that we had in the longevity was we were always trying to do things very by the book, where a lot of people popped up and they were just reviews, where that's really not where we started. We were influencer marketing and we kind of fell into the Amazon space. So when the Amazon crackdown happened and all the TOS, even though we were doing everything by the book during that time, all the other, I guess, bad eggs, you could say, that kind of ruined that, it definitely had an effect on our business. There's no way to deny that. But at the same time, we weren't built on that. So foundationally, it wasn't as hard to pivot as somebody who wasn't in that realm. So that was a interesting dynamic, definitely. And the fact that, yeah, anyway, we could.
No, that's one of those fires as an entrepreneur. That's the fire that tests you.
Yeah.
And you thrived. So final question I ask all the guests on the show is, what is your favorite book and why?
I'm always torn between two, between The Lean Startup and The 4-Hour Workweek, just because Thomason as a brand, when we started it, the company and the kind of the foundation of the company was really built around those two books. And how do we not only build a lifestyle company, but also build something that can scale with software? Because too often entrepreneurs try to do everything and then not being able to let go of certain things or build proper processes. I always talk about processes than people. And that's really where we started, was, yeah, you got to do it, build it, and work yourself out of a job and continuously do that cycle over and over and over again, whether it was customer support, whether it was how do we handle bugs, whether it was marketing, you know, build it, figure it out, develop a process, and then be able to train somebody and pull yourself out of that and always have a KPI or some kind of indicator so that you can look back and say, well, is that person actually executing what they're supposed to be? And whether that's a VA or whether that's somebody in-house, that was always the goal. And that's what I really liked. And that was the biggest thing I took away from both those books was how to scale and how to build processes.
Amazing. I'm really happy that I had that call with Chelsea, obviously to know about SoStock, but also to hear, to connect with you. I have nothing but fond memories with Thomason. Thank you so much for being on the show. I look forward to staying in contact with you, and I will talk to everybody next week.
It was fun sharing this episode with you. If you found value in what you've heard, please show your love with a subscribe, rate, and review of the show. Until next time.